welcome to the Owl's Nest. I'm your host, Skylar Timmons, and joined with me, as always, is Quentin Denny.
How's it going?
Connor Cude.
What's up, boys?
And Nathan Price.
Present.
How you guys doing? It's been a little while.
Things are good. It's not as hot anymore, so I'm happy.
That's been nice.
Yeah, it's been really nice.
We still have to turn the AC off to record this, but it's not nearly as bad. We're not in an easy bake oven anymore.
Yeah, we've had some rain and some cloud cover some of these days. It's been pretty nice.
Yeah, we still have dead grass in the outfield, but
yeah,
it's a work in progress.
Hey, it's looking better though. It's looking better. Hey, we're just sitting here up in here in the suite, and you can see the grounds crew hard at work. So you know they're still trying to fix it.
Yeah, well, sure.
And the wind hasn't destroyed all our banners yet.
So well, it's a good day.
They did,
day.
And then we put them back up.
True.
But good stuff. So we're back with a regular episode this week after our special episode of the Owl's Nest last week where we had our two interviews.
Yeah, everyone went on hiatus except for me.
I didn't go on hiatus. Oh, I kind of did. I kind of did.
We've got Nathan back from his trip. How was your trip, Nathan?
It was pretty awesome. I got to see Seattle win, and then they got no hit a couple days later.
It's all your fault. That's why, though.
I'll take it.
Okay. Says the Dodgers fan.
When I got back from my trip, I was just up with my brother, hanging out with them and the family. Get out of Provo and Orem for a couple days. Get out of my apartment. So, good stuff. Would you guys do anything fun?
I hit in the cage by myself. That was sad.
Yeah, that's a sad time.
Yeah.
Nothing's
more sad than throwing baseballs up to yourself and trying to hit them. So, I missed you, Skylar.
Practicing your fungo, is that what's going on?
Yeah.
Oh, don't worry. I'll give them some real good grounders next time they're here.
All-state fungo hitter right here.
Yeah, my brother-in-law got married, so that was exciting. But that's pretty much all that's going on with us.
Yeah. Yeah. Owls are back from a road trip where they went to Colorado for a while, spent a lot of time on a bus, problems with the hotel, and they're glad to be back.
That's apparently the hotel lost about 30 reservations because that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, geez.
So after a five-hour bus ride from Colorado Springs up to Grand Junction, you get to a hotel, spend an hour and a half in a lobby just to figure out you don't have rooms, so you have to get a new hotel.
And they also had to downgrade from a DoubleTree that was supposed to have their 30 reservations to a Super 8.
Yes.
Ooh.
It's a pretty big jump there.
Takes me back to my high school days.
But we're doing great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quentin and I might be homeless halfway through this month, so
we'll find out.
We'll see. No, but we're glad to be back. We got a good episode lined up for today as we're just barely starting the All-Star break for the Pioneer League. But we've got a pretty good episode. We've got an awesome interview that we'll reveal later, but it rhymes with Bill Bilson.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, so you can start guessing, everybody.
It's going to take me a while.
Yeah. Connor's slow. Sorry. Yeah.
And then we'll just talk about how the Owls have been doing these past couple weeks since we missed last week's episode and talk more about the league, have follow up on some of our bold predictions from July and make new ones for August, the final full month of the Pioneer League season, and then we'll just kind of have some fun near the later half of the show. So kind of moving on, first let's talk about game of the week that we've had from these past couple weeks. What do you guys got?
That's an easy one. Yesterday's game. So recording Monday, today's the 5th.
Yep.
Yeah, so today, Monday the 5th, we're going to do Sunday's game, which was against Grand Junction at home, where we won, was it 8-1?
9-1.
9-1. So our stat line was 9 runs, 11 hits. We had 4 errors. And Grand Junction had 1 run, 4 hits, 1 error. So the reason why I'm giving that our game of the week was I think we only won 2 other games besides that one.
Mm-hmm. In the last 2 weeks, yeah.
It's been a rough road trip, rough homestand to lose to Grand Junction on the first game. But in that game, the only run we gave up was an unearned run. So Kelvin Moncion, he came in and he threw 5 innings and didn't give up any earned runs. He was able to keep the ball down on the ground, got double plays, got what he needed to get through his innings. And then the bullpen came in, and which is a rare fashion, didn't give up any runs. They kept the hits down. They didn't really walk too many guys either, though.
No, there wasn't too many.
Yeah. And so the bats were hitting. The pitchers were keeping guys off the bases. 4 hits for Grand Junction. That's a huge team. You have guys on that tee list who are top five in average home runs. So you're keeping some big bats out of the base paths, which is something that they need to do each game. So I think that was our best game from the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, and the thing I've noticed with our team is that once we get a lead and keep the lead, it seems like that's how our bats stay hot, where as soon as they get behind or lose any kind of lead, everyone just gets disheartened. Everyone kind of starts struggling at in the box, and it just goes downhill from there.
Well, because then you start pressing at that point, and when you're behind and you're like, I got to be the guy that's got to get something going. So you're starting to think too much, start pressing in the box, or you're not making the best swings and things aren't really going your way.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the biggest thing is our bullpen. It's struggled as of late, the last 2 weeks. We've seen leads lost because late-inning guys have come in and just given up runs. Maybe pitchers didn't go as far as we wanted them to go. And so it's the bullpen having to be used extra more than they needed to be done. And so we're wasting guys in the bullpen, wasting arms. And so guys get overworked, and it's just something that just kind of – it's a cycle that we keep going through.
Yeah, and definitely it's – I think it helps when a bullpen guy can come in and there's already kind of, especially at this point when you are struggling, it's good to come in when there is a big lead. So then you have a little bit more breathing room and you don't feel as pressured when you're coming in to throw sometimes. So it's kind of up and down and kind of varies. But I think what I liked yesterday was as a team, we only struck out 4 Grand Junction batters, which means we're getting a lot of just soft contact, fly balls, ground balls. Because we saw what we only gave up 4 hits in that game, plus the 6 walks. So there was some traffic, but we're able to get key double plays and get out of the innings.
Yeah, because I remember at one point they had runners on second and third with 0 outs, and we were able to, I think it was Voss had come in at that point and struck a guy out. And then I think got 2 like flyouts after that or something like that. So, I mean, there, you know, like you said, there was still action going on and there was still some things happening. But, yeah, they were still able to hold them there. So that was
There was a play that I remember with kind of another one of those situations, like runners on the corners or something like that. And infield was playing in and Kevin Arias there. Grand Junction is running on contact with the third runner on third. Kevin Arias gets the quick chopper and fires home. And so they're able to prevent a run there.
And oh, yeah, that's without right.
So they get out of another inning with traffic without a run scoring because they had a heads-up play, cut down a runner at home, and kind of keep everybody else kind of where they're at or kind of still set up a double play possibility to get out of the inning. So I think we see hints of the Owls putting together like these complete games, more or less where hitting's doing well, pitching's doing well. We're still working on defense, but you're still going to have errors as you're learning things.
Yeah, and the telling sign here is the relievers right now, they have a 6.47 ERA, which is awful. It's the worst in the league. And so we just see them struggling with whoever, whatever it may be. And we had guys like Zach Kristofak, who we had as our player of the week 2 weeks ago, who was, we called him like a bulldog, just comes in, pitches strikes, gets guys out, gets contact on the ground, soft contact. He struggled. He, since then, I think his ERA was 19.3 or something like that over the last 2 weeks or 10 days. So you have guys like him, Darian Williams, another one who was lights out of the bullpen to start the season. And one thing I've noticed is if you talk to the stats guy or the video guy, Phil, who works for the Angels or sit up there and watch, if you're just watching the game, velocity is down among most relievers. I'd say 75% of the relievers have lost at least 2 miles per hour on their fastball, and that plays a lot here. You got a guy going from 91 to 88, 89. That's night and day difference for these big league, or not big league, but professional hitters. And that's what they are, is they take that, and it's where we see a lot of the damage done, is slower fastballs, maybe sliders that aren't doing as much. Because if you listen to any major league game in Colorado or maybe Arizona, it's dry, so your slider, your curveball, you just can't get a good enough grip on it to spin it the way you want. So maybe that's what's affecting some of these guys, mixed with lower fastball velocity. But I think it is the All-Star break, 3 days off for the whole team. We'll see what happens when they come back. We play Idaho Falls and Missoula at home this next week. So
That's something I wanted to pose a question to you guys. Do you think that it's just fatigue from like the second half of the season? I mean, most of these guys, it's their first year in professional baseball, maybe their second. And so a lot of them aren't used to the grueling schedule that it is. I mean, do you think that that's playing a factor into this?
I think it could, yeah, because you're still getting into the swing of things and learning how to just the routine of being a big leaguer, being a professional baseball player. And so I think fatigue is starting to set in a little bit. It could, but we'll see. We'll definitely see a rest would be good.
So I think about this. So we got college kids and we got a good amount who we drafted and who are on our team right now. And we have some guys just maybe their second or third year in professional baseball, whether they played in Arizona League and then came up here for the AZL Angels. But in college, even, you play a full year of collegiate baseball, which is like 50 games or something like that. It's not a ridiculous amount. And then most of those guys go and play collegiate summer ball. So either in like the Cape Cod League, California has a league, Alaska has a league. And so these guys are then getting another 40 games on top of that. So it's still only like 90 games. And then they put the next year, you're going to pro ball. So yeah, it's like 140 games.
Yeah, because then you come here and it's 76 games on top of that because we have 38 at home.
Mm-hmm. So you put 76 on top of the already 50 collegiate or for guys who go through spring training, play games, go through extended spring training, play games, and then come to us. Yeah, it's their first time that they're ever playing 150 games of baseball where all you do each day is you get up, you come to the office at 11 o'clock, 1 o'clock, you lift, and then you throw, play baseball till like 11 o'clock at night. So you're doing 12-hour days of just baseball. And so, and a lot of these guys, are, like with the host families and stuff, may have to travel also. So I think fatigue does play a little bit of it, but it's also a league-wide thing where everyone else in the league is doing the same kind of thing we're doing. So, I mean.
Oh, totally. I just meant with your comment of, you know, we've seen some velocity starting to drop on their fastballs. I just wonder if fatigue plays a big part of that or if it's something else that's playing that factor.
I would say fatigue does play a big part. If you just go out, throw a ton, next day try and throw just as fast, your arm's sore, who knows what it is. We only have one trainer, so he can't get to everybody. Maybe someone, I mean, even in rookie ball, minor league baseball, you don't want to disclose injuries too much because then you lose your spot.
Yep.
So it's just tons of factors go into it. Maybe not getting rest, throwing too much, just who knows what goes into it. It's just tons of things, but fastball velocity I have seen is down over the whole staff.
Yeah, it's definitely something that hopefully they can get figured out. And definitely it'll be good with this All-Star break. Get three couple days, maybe even some of these guys will kind of clear their minds, do something they enjoy since they've got this little break. I know a lot of these guys like to go hunting and fishing. Maybe they'll head home, get some fishing in, all kinds of stuff. Kind of clear their minds, because I think that's part of it too, is like Quinn was saying, when it's your entire life just revolves around baseball, like it can just be a strain, like both physically, sometimes mentally. And so able to just like do something relaxing, just relax, clear your mind, focus on other things a little bit, I think can definitely go a long way.
Yeah, from what I understand too, it's sometimes it's difficult for these guys to get a lot of rest while they're going through this grind as well, because a lot of these guys, they get home, like Quinn said, maybe it's between 11 and 11:30, and then they also want to have some time to just relax and have some time for themselves, and so they'll play video games or do other things until, you know, it could be 2 or 3 in the morning, like a lot of people, and then they're not getting the rest that they need, so.
They'll watch Whose Line Is Anyway until 2 o'clock in the morning.
That's just you.
That's an insight on Skyler.
No, that's Quinn. I stopped. Who got me hooked on.
I stopped. You're bad influence, Quinn.
I mean, losing, like winning is contagious. People, when you're winning, you're doing great. Everything is going great. When you're losing, it's the same way. It's just, it weighs on top of you. And there's not as many fans in the stands. Like we have Sunday games where attendance is cut in half or even a third of what it normally is on another night. And it just weighs on you. So a lot of factors. Tanner Raclaitis and Garmin are two pitching coaches. They're really good at what they do. And I believe like they see this too. The coaching staff understands the problems that are going on and they're working with these guys. And trying to help them with pitch grips and everything. And so a lot of it is just a learning curve that these guys, as you can see, will be able to pick up on it and get better in the future.
Did you say it's a learning curve ball?
No. Oh. Just you said that.
No, but What about some of the other highlights of players throughout this stretch? There's hit. I know it's kind of been a struggle these past couple weeks for him, but there's definitely been kind of some bright spots even in some of these games.
I'll say this. Yesterday's game, Kevin Arias, one of the smallest guys on our team, 5'8", probably a 180. I'll give him that, 180 pounds. Gets his first home run yesterday, and that was not a cheat home run either. So Kevin Arias goes to dead center. I think what the stat said was like 425, 430 on it. So the smallest guy on the team hit the biggest home run on the team basically that day. And so yesterday was a good resurgence of home run power with Jose Verrier, Will Wilson, and Kevin Arias getting back into the groove of hitting home runs and getting back to where they can. So I think that was the biggest thing I've seen from the team and individual players is once you get the one home run, it's contagious. Hopefully it, like everyone else gets that too.
Yeah, it was good to see that from Kevin too because, like you said, he's one of the smallest guys on the team. And along with that, we've seen him in BP. He can crank some out of here, like not just over like the first wall, but there's a secondary fence that starts to lead onto the college campus. He can hit him over there in BP, but then we just haven't seen that same power in game. So it was cool to see, like you said, that what was it, like 427?
It was homer. 427, 430, dead center, over the second fence too. So if
you've
been
here, upper fence.
Yeah, so the batter's eye is above the taller fence. And we've talked about that. Kevin has power. A lot of these guys have power, but it's reps, get what you need to into the game. And so I think that's the biggest thing. Our bullpen, our starters have struggled. Turn that around. We need to turn that around somehow.
Like, speaking of pitching, kind of we've talked about the relievers. Let's focus a little bit on the starting pitchers. Definitely like the highlights with them is Matt Leon. He's seen to just chug along, keep doing his thing. Putting in pretty decent starts on the time. And Kelvin Moncione has also been doing a lot. We saw yesterday, he went five innings, only gave up a hit or two. And so we've seen some of these starters kind of keeping us in games. And like when the starter's on, it really helps out the game. What have you guys seen with some of our starters?
Like we said, Kelvin Moncione, who pitched yesterday, kept it on the ground, kept hits down. Was able to keep walks down relatively for a starter. That's good for us. Matt Leon, he's so consistent. Each day you know what you're going to get from him. Like five innings pitched, you're going to give up maybe one or two runs and a couple of hits. Not too many strikeouts, but he still gets strikeouts is the thing for a guy who throws 89 miles per hour.
Yeah, I mean, looking at it in the past nine games, he's had 45 strikeouts. I mean, that's 5 Ks a game. That's not bad. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it's not a ton, but it's definitely good, and it's obviously doing the trick because anytime we see Matt Leon on the mound, I mean, we're
Matt
pretty
Leon?
Much. I don't know if it's Matt Leon, Leon, Leon.
The one.
One of those, but anytime he's on the mound, we see him starting. Usually we have some good confidence going into that game that, okay, we're at least for the first like 4 or 5 innings, we're going to be doing well.
Mm-hmm. And it's just how long can you get your starters to go? And that's something we need is push our starters as far as they can go with their pitch limit. Because these guys do have pitch limits. If you see a guy coming out in the fourth inning and wonder why, it's because everything is highly regulated down here in rookie ball. To how many pitches you throw, when you're up, who bats where, who bats when, who plays in what position, highly regulated from Angels minor league. They tell us what happens basically on the field and who comes in at what time in the bullpen. So being the most efficient is the thing we need to
see.
Yeah,
it's all about that efficiency because if you can learn like good efficiency, like it's a great pitcher. Because I think a trend nowadays, it's always about like pitchers need to be throwing 100 miles an hour and striking everybody out. Where instead of going like the Greg Maddux route where you're just pitching a contact and getting a lot of outs that way through ground balls, fly balls. Like, yeah, strikeouts are fine, but like we were saying with Matt Leon, like 5 strikeouts a game, some of those strikeouts probably come in really key situations, maybe to get out of an inning or just one strikeout to get you an out to start off an inning or something. So I think efficiency goes a long way.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I think if we're talking about efficiency, Kelvin Moncione is probably one of the more efficient starters we have, where in the last 6 games, he's only had 14 strikeouts, but he's also only had a 1.24 ERA. So, I mean, like you were saying yesterday, he was just putting the ball in the right place where we're hitting some double plays, we're hitting just get some ground outs, just some pop out. Like, it was, he was making it so that the defense then had to work and get some easy plays to get out of that inning.
And Moncione, he works quick on the mound. Like, he gets the ball, he's getting ready, and he's relatively quick pace.
Yeah, he paces the game really well.
So then that keeps the defense engaged. They're on their feet, they're engaged in the game, and that just then translates over.
Keeps the video guy happy because he doesn't have to edit until 1-2 in the morning.
Yeah. Shout out Phil.
Shout out Phil.
So definitely we see that with pitching. And now let's kind of move over to hitting. Kind of the good, the bad, and the ugly about hitting. Get our little Clint Eastwood.
I can also make cowboy references.
Can you though?
No.
Do one now.
Nope.
Okay. Do we start with the good or the bad? Because there's more bad than there's good. I'll just say that.
Let's do with the good.
Okay. Kevin hit his first home run. That's one thing. But I'll say this. One thing that I will say that is good that we're doing is we're starting to get walks. We're starting to kind of put things together on the bases where we're not relying so much on the home run ball. We've seen the home run go down, but the runs have stayed relatively the same. And so we're kind of learning how to play well-rounded baseball. That's what I'll say the good is from our hitting.
And as a kind of a predominantly righty lineup, like, we're hitting lefties good. They've got about a .280 average against lefties. And there's quite a few lefties in this league, it looks like. So
there are.
That kind of works in our favor. Like, so that's good when you're able to face something that you're actually hitting well. Mm-hmm. But we definitely still see the struggles in a lot of different areas.
Yeah, Nathan, anything you want to say for the good?
Obviously it was nice to have Kevin get his first home run yesterday. I think it's nice to see Will Wilson kind of leading the team, being the first round draft pick. We've seen some guys move up. It's hard because it's that kind of league where the best players move up and you're kind of left with the guys who are still developing. Hopefully we'll start to see that turn around after the All-Star break, and maybe we'll see some of these guys head up to Burlington.
That's the goal.
And so, I know, like we said, there's still a lot of development. We see guys like Will Wilson, who we still see the potential. He's still learning, but he's still getting hits. We see him. Just guys throughout games, we'll see the kind of these key hits, and it's when hitting gets contagious, I think, is when we see that good. When we're not looking so much at their stats, but what they're doing in the game using our eyeballs for the eyeball test and, like, seeing how they're doing.
Yeah.
So we definitely see those hints of goodness when they're stringing together hits, kind of like yesterday's game.
I mean, I'll just – because we said this a couple times, just to be clarify. When we say hitting is contagious, what that means, we've seen this a couple times. In our walk-off win, we saw this when – we had two guys thrown out. So our first base coach, Franklin Navarro, and we had Will Wilson thrown out. And it's this one thing where Jeremiah Jackson hits a home run. And then if you look down in the dugout in that time, you see everyone is pumped up. Everyone's just like, I want to get up there. I need to get the game-winning run. And then we get another hit, and we tie it, go into extras, and then win it on, I think it was, so we have someone on second already, and Johan Sala wins it off for us. So it was a really short time.
Yeah, he hit like a walk-off single, basically.
Yeah, basically a walk-off single. Deshaun comes in to score, which doesn't hurt when you have the fastest guy on your team second already.
Well, and he was also – that was because it was extra innings in this league. You have a runner on second whoever had the last out is now on second. He's placed on second during those extra innings. And so, it also helps that Deshaun was the last out when you got the fastest guy on the team on second.
Yeah, but it's just something different when you see the couple guys in front of you just continuing to get a string of hits along. And it's you just want to get up there and you just feel more confident knowing that those guys in front of you got hits. And so that's what we mean when it's hitting is contagious.
Yeah, I think it's nice when you're like stringing, like, even if it's just like single after single, 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 double. Or a guy comes in and hits a home run. I think it just builds confidence for the next guy. And then if you aren't able to do something in your bat, but you still have like a productive at bat, maybe you move the runners up, and then the next guy can pick you up and drive those guys in.
Baseball is definitely a mental game. Corey talked about this when we interviewed him, episode 2. So it just gets in your head. You think, this guy got a hit, I can get a hit. Or it's the opposite. This guy struck out, man, I'm going to get up there. Hopefully I do something, which is the mindset you shouldn't have. you should always think, I'm going to get a hit.
Yeah. See the ball, hit the ball.
Yeah.
Be the ball.
Be the ball.
Yeah.
Or as we saw in the bench warmers, imagine it's a mailbox coming in, and then you hit it, and then you drop kick the catcher, who's a mailbox. But kind of speaking of strikeouts, this is where one of kind of the bad and the ugly kind of conversion to each other is. We lead the league in strikeouts with 484, which is quite a few.
Which is not great.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what we've been saying this whole time, is that it's either we hit a home run or we strike out, which, I mean, we have been talking about, we have been just getting the ball in play more rather than just hitting the relying on the home run, really. But it's just, that's just what it seems like, is we're either striking out or we're just not getting as many walks as we could.
Go big or go home.
No.
No, definitely you want to have those bats. I do like what you said, that they haven't been solely relying on it. Like, they're making good contact on some of these balls. I think it was like last Saturday's game against the Rockies. They're putting some good swings on a couple of them that the wind killed. But they're good, solid swings and drives out to center field.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a good part of it, is making contact on the ball in general is really good. Because something can happen. Mm-hmm.
I think also what hurts us is Deshaun, who was hitting above 300 at one point during the season, even up to like the halfway mark, was up towards 300, 290. We've seen him kind of peer off of it and go down. He's hitting, what's he at right now, 133 in his last eight games. So something like that, a leadoff guy who's a table setter. That's what his, I guess if we were to call him anything, he's a table setter, five-tool kind of player. And what that means is he's the guy who needs to get on base so that everyone can knock him in. And he is struggling right now, so it's kind of hard to, you're starting the game already with maybe one out if he goes up there. And a lot of these times he's striking out. And so yeah, it's been at the plate.
And especially like you were saying, he's that table setter. I mean, if you look at our lineups, he's typically the first or second batter every single game. And so, yeah, he's kind of that. He sets the tone, and it doesn't help when your first guy strikes out almost every time he gets up to bat.
And he's also a huge energy presence on the bench. Yeah. If you look down in the bench, or if you know anything about Deshaun Knowles, our interview last week, he's a very like high energy guy, likes to joke
super
around.
Super happy.
Mm-hmm. And so if he gets down, maybe strikes out or gets out on a fly ball, ground out, whatever it may be, you kind of come back a little. It's hard to kind of like put on a fake smile after you just strike out. And kind of be that guy who has to be the energy, the uplifter. He's one of those guys who, he's bilingual, or he might know more, but he knows Spanish and English, so he connects with both sides of the team, the Spanish side and the English side. So he's a huge presence that, with that 130 that he's hitting right now, it's a huge hit to the team.
Yeah, and so that's definitely something that they've got to work on, is putting together quality at bats, putting the ball in play, I think, and making contact and cutting down on those strikeouts, because when they cut down on that, then we see success, because again, like we said, balls getting hit into play, it might cause an error, you might be able to just beat out a throw or just get a hit. Because except for Will Wilson, Anthony Mulrine, and Jeans Flores, everyone has more strikeouts than hits this season.
Yeah,
which kind of equates to the team's batting average, which is .254, which is tied for the lowest in the league with the Rocky Mountain Vibes.
And we talked about this is a hitter's league. We're at elevation. We're at guys, pitchers who are still trying to figure out their zone. A lot of these teams have guys hitting 300. We're just struggling. And a lot of that, we don't know. Maybe it's a mental thing. Maybe it's strikeouts. It's all whatever the player needs to work on. They know what the problem is, and they're working on it. And we can guarantee that they know what something's up, and they're still trying to fix it.
Yeah, and maybe it's just me being crazy, but I just feel like we have so many guys that just watch strikes like right down the middle, just go on by. And I don't know if that's, you know, has to do with the Angels hitting philosophy. I know the Angels are very have a lot of pride and a lot of money invested into their hitting philosophy, and maybe that's just part of it, but I just feel like they watch a lot of strikes go right on by. And if we're gonna get more balls in play, we're gonna get that average up, we really just need to start swinging at anything that's decently close to the strike zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe guys just let the ball go past them where they shouldn't. It's hard. The umpires are also rookies too. So something that they may know that is a strike or isn't a strike, that's a ball, maybe called a strike. And
yeah, but to be fair, like, I mean, Corey has talked about this with me before, that, you know, even when he was playing in the majors, they knew certain umpires had a different zone than what you would think would be the strike zone. And they'd say, oh, this is a low ball. Like, this is a low umpire. This is an outside umpire. Like, they just knew, okay, this guy is going to call it a certain way, so I've got to swing at certain balls over others. And so I think that's something else that these guys just need to learn, is that every umpire is going to be different. It doesn't matter where you get to the majors. They're not going to be perfect.
Yeah. And, I mean, there's nothing more we can say about this. I think we've said enough about what the problems are with the hitters, what the problems are with pitchers. We just hope that they can string stuff together. We're at the All-Star break, like we said, 3 days rest, 3 days to recuperate, not think about baseball. That's the most important thing. Don't think about baseball. Just rest and come back better. And so I think one thing we need to talk about is, so we are past the first half of the season. Idaho Falls, we talked about this. It was going to be a tight race between Idaho Falls and Missoula. Idaho Falls did pull away, barely, to win the North first half champions, I guess.
Yeah, they clinched the playoffs.
Yeah, they clinched the playoffs
for the first
North.
Half.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, Ogden clinched the playoff for the South, and it wasn't even close.
Yeah, there was,
I think,
no,
they clinched it
there,
like a week and a half before they should have.
Yeah.
Yeah,
pretty
so
much.
It wasn't even close.
Yeah, so kind of how the Pioneer League, how the playoffs work is there's the two halves. And so whoever wins is leading your division after the first half, they clinch a spot. And then it moves on to the second half where it kind of resets your record, so to speak. Irvin then starts at like 0-0. And it's whoever then, again, the same type thing, the best record in each division, then gets the next playoff spots.
But if for some reason Ogden and Idaho Falls happen to be that top spot again in the second half, it's whoever comes in second during that second half then goes and plays them for the playoff spot.
Yeah. So currently here in this second half, these are what the standings are currently. Up in the North, Billings and Missoula are tied for first with a 6-3 record, followed by Great Falls, who's at 3-6, as well as Idaho Falls, who is at 3-6. But good for them. They might not have to worry as much because they're in the playoffs, but definitely probably works with seeding. And
they will have to worry, though, because like they had a 12-game win streak to start the season, and then it all fell apart towards the second half to where they barely snuck by and won that division. So I'm just curious to see what Idaho Falls will do the second half and if they can even do anything in the playoffs since they clinched
already. I'm also curious to know if that has to do with like how they're playing, or is it have to do with like player transactions? Is there, you know, are their best guys just getting moved out and that's what's happening, or is it just because they just had a hot streak and then it just fell apart? I'd be curious to know that.
Yeah. But Idaho Falls and Missoula will be coming down here, and we can kind of get the inside information with some of their guys, figure out what happened, and we'll let you guys know next week.
Yeah. And then here in the South, Grand Junction and Ogden are both tied at the top of the division with 6-3 record, and then Rocky Mountain is at 4-5, so they're two games back, and then Orem is at 2-7 here in the second half, four games back. So definitely see what happens here in this second half and for both of these divisions. But we'll go ahead and take a quick break. We've got our interview with our special player. Have you figured it out yet, Connor?
I want to say Jeremiah Jackson again, but I'm not totally sure.
No, that's
so close.
That does
You're
not
so
rhyme
close.
With Bill Bilson.
Oh, dang it. I forgot about the hint.
So we got an interview with Will Wilson.
Ooh. Oh, I get it now.
You were there.
I'm there.
So.
I was right there.
So we got an interview with Will Wilson, and we'll be right back after that. And we're back here on the Owl's Nest. We're joined by Angels 2019 first-round pick, Will Wilson. Will, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So we got to get something address them right off the bat. We've asked a couple of your teammates, Jeremiah Jackson and Darian Williams, a question about being on Desert Island. They had to pick two teammates to be there with them. Both of them chose you as one of them, saying that you'd be able to help them survive. Do you agree with that? What's the deal with that? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, growing up in a little small town, you obviously you stay outside all the time and hunting fish and stuff like that. So I'd say Yeah, it'd be a pretty good pick to take on this desert island thing. So,
JJ said that him and Deshaun would sit around and just hang out, and they'd have you do everything.
They'd have me do everything.
Want to respond to that?
Yeah, if they entertain me, I think I do everything. I think those two are pretty entertaining, so I think it's worth a while going with them.
Yeah.
I think that was the idea. That they said they'd be the morale guys.
Yeah. I think they're pretty good at that already. So.
Shoot you on from behind
while
they're doing whatever.
Yeah.
Grabbing coconuts probably.
Yeah, exactly. So that being said, who would you take with you on a desert island? If you're trying to get off a desert island, who would you take with you?
I'd take with me. Yeah. I would take Morgan McCullough.
Okay.
And probably JJ.
Yeah.
Morgan's a hardworking guy. JJ probably for the morale booster, you know. Have a little fun there.
Keep it real positive.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. I like it.
So kind of in your first year of professional baseball, how has it been just getting the experience here with the Owls and everything?
I mean, it's been an adjustment coming out to a part of the country I've never been to. So it's obviously beautiful out here. You can see mountains in every backdrop or field you play at. But different playing every day with new guys. So, I mean, you make a lot of new friends here, and it's just an adjustment you have to make and keep going every day and push yourself as hard as you can and get to know everybody and have some fun, yeah.
So
how was it going from you got drafted, you signed, and so it was like a huge process of just short week going from drafted, you go down to L.A., you sign down there, and you come up to Orem in Utah, and then you're playing basically 3 days after that.
Yeah.
How was that whole ordeal going?
It's pretty crazy. I mean, it didn't really slow down after the draft happened. You don't really get much time to sit back and relax. They call you and they're like, hey, you're flying out Sunday to come out to LA. And I was like, all right, that's sick. But you're staying there for a day and then you're going to Orem, and it starts right up from there. So I mean, we just finished our college season a week and a half before that, and then you come out here and you don't really get a break. But I mean, you got to figure out a way to take care of your body and keep going and keep playing.
That's what I was actually going to ask, is how have you been able to do that? Have you been able to keep that pace and keep that stamina where you played a whole college season and then coming right into rookie ball?
Yeah, I think the best thing is like making sure you eat right, you stay hydrated, which we do a really good job of staying hydrated in this organization. But you got to learn how to take care of your body. You got to learn how to do the lifts that you want to do that help the things that you want to get better at, and just making sure you stretch and roll out and get those lower like tissue working every day. So just making sure that the fine work is there and not taking anything for granted each day.
So you grew up in North Carolina. We talked a little bit about that before the show, how you were into hunting, fishing, and things like that. What was like your go-to for hunting?
My go-to for hunting when I was younger is deer. I didn't really get into duck hunting until I moved to college, because I grew up in the western part of the state, not a whole lot of water. You move to the eastern part of the state, a lot more duck hunting involved. So couple guys on my college team actually took me duck hunting for the first time, and I fell in love with that. So right now, duck hunting is my go-to.
There's a lot of guys down in the clubhouse who that's what they do. You see Zach Kristofak, guys like Cam Williams, who are huge into duck hunting and hunting like that. You talk to any of those guys about it?
Yeah, so I talk to Caleb Sires pretty much every day about what we're going to do in the offseason. It's going to be a hunt, so it's going to be a lot of fun, yeah.
Nice, man. What other hobbies would you say you had, like, kind of growing up in North Carolina in that area?
So my dad actually played golf in college. So we didn't live near the country club, but my grandpa did. So we played golf every now and then. I'm not the greatest golfer. Obviously, baseball worked out a lot better than golf would have for me. So doing that, I mean, just hanging out with friends and family and cooking out and having bonfires and stuff like that.
Nice. So where'd your dad play college golf for?
He went to Campbell University.
Okay, yep. Very cool.
Do you know what your handicap is?
I have no idea.
There you go. So that explains about how
good I am.
Then. Yeah.
It's probably still better than me.
Probably still better than me, too. But did you play any other sports growing up in high school, or
was it just baseball? So I played in high school my freshman year. I played football and basketball, and then after that decided probably just stick with baseball, and it worked out a little bit for me. So
here's the running question that we have with other people who played baseball, like JJ, or basketball, like JJ. We talked to Darian Williams. Can you dunk it?
I cannot.
No?
I cannot dunk.
We found someone who we can relate to now. That's what we can do. I think Skylar's the only one who said he could dunk it at one point.
At one point in my life, but my knees are too bad now. I can't jump. It hurts coming down.
Yeah, I'm really good at touching the net. That's about
I can get the rim. I just can't get the ball over the rim.
That's about where I'm at now.
Second knuckle with the rim.
Yeah, I get stuck there every time.
Yeah, maybe a tennis ball.
I can dunk tennis balls in like a volleyball, but I can't get a basketball open over.
Yeah, me neither.
So we wanted to ask you a little bit. So you went to NC State. We talked about that. Trey Turner was someone who came through NC State, shortstop. Did you ever get to meet him or talk to him?
So my freshman fall, he actually came in for a couple of days, and we took ground balls and just hung out together, and it was nice to just pick his brain a little bit. And then this past year he came down just hitting the cage a little bit. So, I mean, you just sit there and you listen to somebody like that talk. You try to pick their brain as much as possible. Like when Simmons came out here to play, mm-hmm. you just try to learn as much as you can from each and every one of them.
What would you say was like the best piece of advice that either one of them gave you?
I wouldn't say the best piece of advice, but the one thing I took from Trey Turner was he said when he got to the big leagues, like any fastball that was inside was a free home run. And it kind of was like, what? And I guess it's the adjustment the guys make in the big leagues when they hit to when they see that pitch, they can just react and hit it and how the ball has changed and how everything's changed. So it's just kind of cool to hear something like that.
Interesting. Nice. Most of us, I see, like, we see fastball inside and we think, you know, way anyone's getting to that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool to hear that from a big leaguer who's had a lot of success in the big leagues to see, like, yeah, fastball inside, just to hear what they have to say about things like that.
No doubt.
And so – you guys were kind of drafted in the same area, first round, about, was it, when were you drafted, 15?
15, I think he was 14 or 13, yeah, something like
so,
that.
Yeah, so something about those North Carolina State, those shortstops.
Not
there.
Not bad, right?
Yeah, so take us through what your draft day was like when you got the call.
It was kind of crazy. So I came in, my advisor at the time called me, and he basically said the Angels were out. They weren't even locked in. I was kind of projected to go later in the draft, not around 15, probably around 20 to 30-ish, and so, I mean, I really wasn't expecting my name to get called, and we kind of worked through the process and had all my family, friends, and fiance and everybody in town. It was really nice to just sit there with them. And then I got a call at, like, pick 10, and my advisor said, the Angels are in. It's like, they want to cut a deal. And I was like, all right, so I can't turn that down. Like, it's the 15th overall pick. Like, you can't turn that down. So he called me then. I was like, yeah, definitely. And then you hear your name pop up, and it's just cool to have everyone there and just celebrate and have a good time.
Was there another team where you said, if I don't get picked at this point, they're definitely going to grab me?
Not really. I mean, it's kind of crazy how the draft works out. You never really know what's going to happen. And like I said, I wasn't even projected to go in that range where I did. But, I mean, if something works out, you got to take it and you got to go with it and run with it. So.
Yeah. And so Andrew Blake was another teammate you had at NC State, and now you get to play with him here in Orem. What's that like, being able to have someone familiar down there?
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, I walked in the locker room here at Orem, and he's sitting there, and he's nice to have, like, a friendly face to look at and just somebody to talk to. And he only played at State for 1 year while I was there. He's a JUCO guy. And, I mean, he's come out here and he's done a really, really good job pitching and threw really well last night. So it's just nice to have somebody there you can talk to. And, I mean, we're from around the same place, so it's cool to talk about that too.
So did you know he was here until you showed up or no?
Yeah, I knew. We had talked. So we were moving out of the apartments in NC State at the same time. And then he was like, yo, are you going to Orem? I was like, yeah. I was like, I'm going after I go to L.A. because he went to Arizona first. And then
right.
He got here a day before I did, and then I came in. It was just pretty cool to see him here.
Nice. Very nice.
And can you talk more about other teammates, you know, working with J.J., because you're both middle infielders. How is your relationship kind of building up and helping out each other?
I mean, it's pretty awesome. You come in here, and obviously he's a high-profile guy, and he's swinging the bat, I mean, amazing. He's got 13 or 14 home runs already this year. And I mean, just try to like pick his brain. He's been in pro ball for a little longer than I have. So like things that he's seen, and he tries to pick my brain with things that I've seen in college. And we kind of just combine our knowledge, and it's worked out really well for us so far. And hopefully we can just keep building on our relationship that we've made so far.
How important is it to have a guy like a friend, really, like in JJ, with a middle infielder where you're turning to together all the time?
Oh, I think it's very important. I mean, we sit out there, and if you watch us, we just sit there and talk until the pitch is thrown, and we just hang out. And then sometimes we'll get in a little bickering argument. So it's just nice to have somebody to relax with and just hang out and just know that they know the game as well as you know the game. So it's pretty cool.
For sure. And you mentioned that your fiance was with you on draft day, and I know she was here at the beginning of the season a little bit too, right?
Yeah.
Just spending some time with you. So how's the wedding planning going?
We're actually pretty much done with it, and you know, like we were talking about JJ, he's actually coming to the wedding, so I mean, that's how our relationships build. So it's awesome. I mean, it's fun to have somebody you can relate to, like with her, and having her come out and see somewhere new with me and experience that and just get involved. And I think she's going to try and come back, but I don't know. But the wedding plan is pretty much done, so just got to get to December now.
Nice. So when's the date? Just December?
December 14th.
Very nice. Congratulations, by the way.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm the only one married here out of all of us, so yeah. I know how it goes.
Yeah, it gets a little hectic.
So. Yeah, it sure does.
Do you have your honeymoon planned yet or where you're going?
Yeah, we actually just booked it a couple of days ago. We're going to Jamaica, stay in an all-inclusive resort, and hang out there for like 8 days, I think. So
there you go. Nice. What if you do get trapped? we'll really figure out if you can get off that island.
I'll get off. Don't worry about that.
I'll be back for next season. All right.
Need to. And so we saw some tweets that you had talking about how, like, you're big into gloves. JJ talks about it. We've heard you down there guys talking about it. What is it like to design a glove? What goes into it? What are you looking for in a glove?
Looking for. So I actually am. I recently signed a deal with Wilson. I used to be a Rawlings guy. My last name kind of fits the Wilson profile. So, yeah. I mean, I turned over to them last year in college and kind of fell in love with how they manufacture gloves. It's a little softer than the Rawlings ones are and a little bit more flimsy. And I kind of like that about a glove where I can just easily break it in, easily squeeze it, get it ready to go. So those are my two big things looking for. And I like a decently bigger size glove than most guys do, like 11 3/4 instead of 11 1/2. So just something to play with there. And I'm not big into customizing gloves. I'm more of a stock guy, get it, get ready to go. So
just grab it and go.
Yeah.
So for a glove, are you more, you want it to be harder, or you'll wear it down until it like falls apart?
I like it to be stiffed in the very beginning, and then once the thumb wears down, I like it to be super like flimsy so it doesn't like tighten back up on me. I like it to be ready to go every time.
Yeah, because there's guys like Trey Turner, Troy Tulowitzki, who have their gloves for like 7 years.
I love that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is that the kind of guy you're like?
I have. So my Rawlings glove, I had it from freshman year of high school to sophomore year of college. So
jeez.
Not bad.
So you said you're not really a customizable guy. You're more of a stock guy. Did you just really hate class that much? You said right here in 2013, all I do in class now is customize gloves.
I tell you what, when you're sitting in high school class and all you can do is sit there and try and pay attention, not the biggest guy at school, so I sit there and I used to do that all the time, yeah.
No, man, I feel you. I just thought it was funny that you said you weren't really a customizable guy, but then we had that tweet already pulled up.
That's funny. Yeah, not anymore. I mean, I definitely used to beg my dad to sit there and just like order custom gloves, but he never did. I got like one of them, so
nice.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think we got a bad boy who orders from 44 like every other day.
Yeah, Jack. I talked to him down there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's always with him. I think he's got like three of those now.
Yeah.
But you said you're not much of like a college guy, so you went for 3 years. At NC State, right?
Yeah, 3 years.
What were you studying?
So I said I'm not big in school. My mom teaches. I was not big on going to school. Obviously, yeah. Like I wanted to do well. My mom's a teacher. She like kind of raised me to do that. I actually graduated in 3 years with a marketing degree. So
really?
Oh, nice. Yeah.
There's two of us are marketing guys right here.
Yeah.
But yeah, different lifestyle, I guess.
Yeah,
please play
different.
Baseball. We're actually doing marketing
yeah,
now.
I was gonna say.
Yeah, marketing is the backup plan for him. Baseball was the washout for us, I guess.
True. So you played on Team USA, the U-17 team.
Yeah.
What was that like?
So we played in Orange County, California for a week. It was more of a – they had like 40 guys come out, two 20-man teams, and we just inter-squad. So, I mean, it was cool to learn from some guys that were out there and play with everybody. Neat experience.
Did you guys play against any other countries, or was it just inter-squad,
basically? So I did the USA my – freshman, sophomore year of college, and that's when we played against different countries, but we didn't do it when I did the U-17 team.
So U-17 was more of like a training camp.
Yeah, kinda. Like a training camp type deal.
So when you did it in college, where did you go and play?
So my freshman year, we stayed in the States and played Chinese Taipei, Japan, and Cuba. Then my sophomore year, we played Japan, Chinese Taipei, in the States, and went to Cuba for a week. So
how was it going to Cuba?
Very interesting, like a throwback in time. Pretty cool, but it's nice to say I went there, but I don't really want to go back. So
yeah.
Awesome. So we wanted to ask you kind of your perspective as a position player and hitter. Have you heard about the stealing first rule that's kind of being tested out in the Atlantic League?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it. I think it's just baseball is a game, and like, yeah, it's got to evolve with time, but I think once you try to change things like that, it turned into a different game, and some people are going to like it, but I think majority of the people who watch baseball for the right reason, they're not going to take time and watch that anymore. So,
yeah, so there we go. We got a hitter's perspective and we got a pitcher's perspective from Darian Williams.
Yeah, he talked about how much he hated that role.
Yeah, I don't think
it's just like a free base. No one earns it.
I don't think anyone's going to – yeah, I doubt it goes anywhere. So
do you feel like that for the drop third strike rule too?
No, I think that's been a rule for a long enough time where it's people kind of see where it's coming from. I think once you start implementing, like, guy throws a wild pitch, your first pitch to the bat, and you can just walk down to first base, it's kind of different than if you strike out and can run. So
Okay. So are you big into like the baseball history then, and like the rules that go with it and the players that go with it?
Not like huge, but I kind of know a little bit about stuff here and there.
Okay. Who's your favorite player growing up, like that you idolized or tried to model your game after?
So I grew up in North Carolina. Obviously the Braves are the closest, or the Nationals, but watching Chipper Jones, I love watching Chipper Jones, and still to this day, like watching old videos on him is pretty cool.
And who would you say is like the most famous person that you've met so far, whether it be player or anyone outside of that?
Most famous? I mean, I met Mike Trout, so it's hard to say that I haven't met any more famous person than him.
It's hard to beat a better baseball player.
I was gonna say, I probably met the best player to ever play the game right now. So
were you able to pick his brain or ask him about things, or was it just like a meet and greet kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I got to ask him a little bit about his process through like the minor leagues and how he went about it and how his approach changed here and there, so it was pretty cool to get that.
Yeah, didn't spend too much time in the minor leagues.
No, not at all.
Yeah, no time in Orem. It was the only place he skipped on his career path.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Went straight from Arizona to Burlington?
Yeah, well, it wasn't Burlington back then. It was actually a bunch of different affiliates back then. He went straight to Single A, which, I mean, makes sense.
Yeah, he's one of the best ever. So.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a decent guy. So we have some like quick-fire questions. We just want to hear quick answers to these. So we've asked a couple of your teammates and a couple other people, is double-dipping ever acceptable?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Will you ever call it, you're good with it?
I'm good with it. I'm fine with it.
Even in the clubhouse? If someone else does it and like chips?
I'm probably not going to. I'm not the guy that's going to call him. I'm pretty relaxed when it comes to that stuff.
Yeah. JJ was kind of mixed on it.
Yeah, he said it was okay with family, but then as soon as we said, okay, so like in the clubhouse, you're okay with it? He was like, oh, no, definitely not. I was like, you're going to call him out? He's like, yeah, I'd call him out for it.
Yeah, JJ said.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't really care, so.
There you go. I think I'm in the same boat. I really don't.
Okay, Will Wilson confirmed. Not a germaphobe.
Okay, there we go. So what is your favorite movie?
Favorite movie? I was actually talking with this about someone the other day. I had to go with Journey to the Center of the Earth, first one.
The Disney one?
Big fan of Journey to the Center of the Earth. Yeah.
So does that mean that Drumline is not the movie anymore?
Oh, it's still the movie.
It's still the movie?
But it's not like the big movie. It's just like the movie.
Okay, fair enough.
So for anyone wondering, we have another tweet here from Will. I think that's 2013 still again. How old were you?
What was I? So it's what, 2019? I'm 21.
6 years ago?
6 years ago.
Okay.
About 15?
15 years.
Doing my math right?
Yeah.
But the tweet says Drumline is the movie. So it's confirmed. Period. Drumline is still the movie.
It's still the movie.
But favorite movie right now is Journey to the Center of the Earth. Okay.
Okay, there we go. So you talked about this. North Carolina has a little bit of both of these. Beach or mountains?
That beach. I got to go with beach.
Is that why honeymoon's in Jamaica?
Yeah.
And not in the Rockies?
Yeah, not in the Rockies. I mean, I love the mountains and we used to go to like Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, like up there and get a cabin, stay in there for a week. But there's nothing like sitting out in the sun on a summer day and just chilling on the beach. Like it's amazing. So
I agree. As someone else from North Carolina, I can confirm that.
Especially when you're from the mountains. Like, I mean, I'm not from like these mountains or anything, but like I'm still living in the mountains. It's not the same to like go to more mountains for me.
Yeah.
So
do you ever spend time in like the Outer Banks or anything down there?
We usually go back home we go to Myrtle Beach, which is in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I'm in state, we'd go to Wilmington.
Okay.
So
there you go.
Yep.
So beaches over mountains.
Definitely.
And so here's a controversial for depending on where you are. Best kind of barbecue.
You're talking about like vinegar, tomato base, or mustard base?
Yeah, what's your tomato base? No vinegar, huh?
So Western North Carolina is tomato based, Eastern North Carolina is vinegar based. And there's this place called Bridges Barbecue in Shelby, North Carolina, right near my house, and we used to eat there like 3 times a week. It's the best barbecue I've ever had. And then you move to Eastern North Carolina, the vinegar base just kinda like offsets it. It's like just not that big of a fan.
I think I agree too. Tomato based. Yeah,
they pretty much
vinegar.
Soak everything in vinegar over there.
Yeah, it's kind of you ever had Smithfield's?
Uh-uh.
It's like a chain, like vinegar-based chain in North Carolina, and it's not. They just drench it in vinegar. It's not the best thing ever.
Yeah, no, my family wasn't into the whole vinegar, mustard-based barbecue. There was like no barbecue place that we found, and then randomly a Sticky Fingers moved into Charlotte, and we're like, finally, somewhere that's not vinegar-based.
There you go.
We would get Sticky Fingers all the time.
Yeah.
What's the best kind of cut of meat?
Cut of meat? I get like chopped. Like pulled pork chops, so that's my go-to.
There you go.
All right, well, it's lunchtime, so I guess
we're going to party. I guess you can tell what time it is by some of these questions.
Yeah.
So last question here is, what is your pregame routine like?
I kind of like to get here early. We don't have to be on the field, like, stretch and ready to go till 6:40. So, I mean, we obviously hit BP and stuff in the cages or on the field before. I like to get here early and kind of relax in the locker room and roll out and get changed and do my cupping or whatever I need to do in the training room and then go hit in the cage, go through a routine there. I mean, it's kind of just very similar. You hit, you take ground balls, you go out here a couple minutes earlier than you need to and make sure you get all your rolling in so you don't you're ready to go and lose for the game and then come out here and be relaxed and play the game.
So you said something that I want to follow up on, cupping. What's that like?
I wasn't a big fan on it when it first came out, like into Raleigh we used it a little bit. And then I started using it on my back and my legs when I would get tight. And it's amazing what it actually does. Like, it just loosens you up so much. And I don't know what it does to do that, but, like, you come out with big circles on your back and your legs.
Yeah, got those bruises.
Like, what's going on? But, I mean, it does it, so I'm going to keep doing it until it doesn't work anymore.
There you go. Hey, Connor, can we do cupping after our interviews now?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Whole body.
Full body. But, yeah, that's all the questions we have for today. Skyler, do you have any?
No, just thank you so much for joining us. We've been joined by Angels' first round pick of 2019, Will Wilson. Thank you so much, and best of luck to you.
I appreciate it. Thank you all.
All right, we're back here on the Owl's Nest. That was Will Wilson. How fun was that interview?
It was pretty good. One thing, though, Skyler.
Okay, I got to talk about this. So we asked him that question about his favorite movie.
Uh-huh.
We thought it was going to be Drumline.
And which then is still the movie. Which is still the movie.
It's still the movie.
It's still the movie.
Journey to the Center of the Earth. I got a beef with this one.
He's been sitting on this. So we interviewed Will Wilson 3 weeks ago? Two weeks ago?
Like 2 weeks ago. I've been sitting on this for 2 weeks.
Festering.
Just festering and fuming about it. Because it just made me so angry on the inside.
Okay, let's hear it.
Because if he's talking about the Brendan Fraser one, that movie is probably one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Shout out to Brendan Fraser.
Yeah.
Good actor. I love The Mummy.
Yeah.
Everything else he's been in hasn't been great.
How dare you? George of the Jungle is a classic.
Okay, yeah, George of the Jungle. I watched Inkheart on Netflix. Terrible.
Okay.
That movie's just awful because you've got it's terrible CGI. They're in front of a green screen for like an hour and a half. And when you're in a light jog being chased by a dinosaur, you got to make it believable that you're actually running away from a dinosaur.
When was the last time you were chased by a dinosaur?
Just last week.
Okay.
No, so it just cracked me up when he said it was Journey to the Center of the Earth. I've just been flustered by
it. Out of every movie, we have Avengers Endgame that came
out.
We
have
Infinity War.
The number one movie of all time.
Just came out this last year. And he says Journey to the Center of the Earth. You can't trust Will Wilson, can we?
I didn't ask him about movies.
Welcome back to the Owl's Nest, the movie podcast of the Pioneer League.
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah. Angels in the Outfield.
Oh, yeah. Hey, we did finish that movie. Tomorrow. Yeah.
Oh, we finished that one.
Yeah. We finished Angels in the Outfield. Good movie. Skylar's first time seeing it.
It's not that great.
Okay.
It's kind of cheesy.
Classic, though.
Anyways, definitely appreciate Will coming on, despite his terrible movie choice. He's going to hate me now if he ever listens to this.
Yeah.
But let's kind of move around. We got some updates on former Owls players, and Connor's got that.
Yeah, so just a few I wanted to cover. Couple pitchers and then an outfielder. So the first one is Jake Lee. He was a pitcher for us last year, and something I wanted to note is that Jake Lee is one of the best closers we had, if not the best closer that we had last year. I mean, I've said this multiple times to people that last year when I saw him getting on the mound, especially because we struggled a lot last year with wins and with our starters, they just couldn't get out of it, like the first two innings, and we'd be down like 12-2. Like, it was just awful half the time. And anytime I saw Jake coming in, though, to close the game, I knew we were set. I knew we were actually going to get out of this game. He was just a rock star. And you can see that last year he had a 2.66 ERA in 17 games and 23 innings pitched. And then he was started this year in Burlington where he pitched only three games and 11 innings but had a 3.27 ERA. And then he moved up to, so now he's currently in Inland Empire with the 66ers and has a 4.5 ERA. So, I mean, his ERA has gone up, but he also has had 34 strikeouts in Inland. And last year he had 5 saves for us. So, like I said, he's a solid starter. It's good to see that he's been moving up and doing well because he's just an all-around good guy. The next one I wanted to go over is Chris Rodriguez. He played back in 2017. That was before my time with the Owls, but from what I understand, he was just one of the nicest guys, and he's had a really interesting career with like injuries and things like that. But when he was here in 2017, he had a 6.4 ERA and 32 strikeouts with a 1.3 WHIP. And we can see in his last three games, he's had a 0 ERA. In 9 innings pitched with 13 strikeouts and a 1.07 WHIP at Inland Empire, on the same team with Jake Lee. So it's cool to see some former pitchers doing really well in maybe some not so friendly pitcher areas like here in Orem. But yeah,
and one thing that is huge for if you're gonna look at any relief pitcher closer, look at their WHIP. That's walks plus hits per inning pitched. And that tells you how many times people per inning on average will get on base. And you want to get that as far below one as you can because that shows how elite you are. 1.2 is still really good.
Yeah.
But anything below one is elite. Anything from like 1 to 1.2 is good. Anything above that, average to bad.
Yeah, so you can see that Chris Rodriguez has definitely come down on that and really improved on his ERA as well, just coming out of Orem 2 years ago. And then the last one I wanted to go over is a big name, Brandon Marsh. He is an up-and-coming outfielder. He's in Mobile right now with the Bay Bears, and he's hitting 284 right now, which is a little bit lower than we saw earlier in the season. But the problem is he got injured around the first part of June with a leg injury, and then didn't come back for almost a whole month. He didn't come back really till like the first part of July. And back in 2017 when he was here, he was hitting 350 with a 944 OPS. He had 4 home runs. And right now, like I mentioned in Immobile, he's hitting 284 in 72 games with 5 home runs and 31 runs. So anyway, he's been doing really well over in AA. And from what I understand after talking to one of the Angel scouts is that he honestly probably would have been in AAA this year if it hadn't been for that injury that took so much time away from him.
That 2017, though, said 2017 team for the Owls was stacked. Another guy who AA, Joe Adell, getting his call up to AAA now.
Yeah.
So that's the number one prospect, Joe Adell. The number two prospect, Brandon Marsh.
Yep.
Both played on the same team.
And you went and saw him in his debut at Salt Lake. How did he do, Quinn?
He did decent, 1-for-4. Showed off his 80 grade speed. The dude is fast. He's huge. He's a big guy. A lot of just like looks strong. A lot of power in the bat. Just wasn't able to connect. Who knows what it is, but Joe Adell is the real deal.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear. It's true. That 2017 really was stacked. And we have see a lot of good guys coming out of that. So it'll be interesting to see in the next few years how many do make it up to the Angels or even just make it up to like AAA level. Because, yeah, there's a lot of good guys coming from Orem. And as we all know, the first stop to Anaheim is in Orem.
Arizona, but yes. But we predicted this. We said we thought, as a podcast, Joe Adell would be making to AAA maybe towards the middle of the season, which is what it is. He's there. So I think he's on pace to make it to Anaheim and play with the Angels by the end of the year.
Yeah.
I think Joe Adell will probably be their 26th, 27th man call-up for September.
And, I mean, you look at the amount of injuries that the Angels have been going through lately. I mean, it's a real possibility at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then it just all gets into the contract and, like, there's all the business side of baseball that comes with. All that stuff. So who knows?
Yeah, but exactly. I mean, you even saw with someone like Mike Trout, he bounced up and down for a little while, and then obviously he's a permanent spot on the Angels roster forever.
Yeah,
for the next 14 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Must be nice.
It is. You can ask him sometime.
I can. When?
What?
When's he coming? That out. When's he coming back
when
down
you
here?
Sneak into the clubhouse.
We don't talk about that.
And one last quick one that we want to hit on is Adrian Rondon from the Owls this year who got called up to Burlington. How's he been doing?
He's been doing great, honestly. Which is really good to see in a place like Burlington where it's definitely a pitcher-friendly league at such a low elevation compared to Orem. But right now he's hitting .294 in 12 games, and it's really cool to see someone like Adrian Rondon, who got released by Tampa Bay after last year and then got picked up by the Angels, sent here when he was playing in single A for Tampa Bay before. And so, yeah, to get that call up and to still be hitting really well, it's awesome to see. He's just a nice guy all around too.
Awesome guy. Real good at the bat. Real solid at third base, the corners. Played a little shortstop for us. Not his natural position, but real athletic guy. So it's hard to see when a guy gets released from the minor leagues because this is their job, their livelihood, especially foreign guys who come to a different country. But I'm really glad to see that hasn't lost track of how he was producing here at Orem. He's still producing up in Burlington. So I see he probably, if he keeps this up, could get up to Inland by the end of the year.
Yeah, so we're definitely happy for him. We miss him on the Owls, but we're glad for all the work that he's doing.
Glad he's gone.
We're glad he's here, and we hope he never comes back.
Yes, that's how it is.
But, well, thank you, Connor. We're definitely always happy to see former Owls players and having seen the success that they're having. And hopefully we'll see them all in the big leagues one day. This has been fun. It's been good to be back with the Owl's Nest here this week. And we'll be back shortly in 7 days more with another edition of the Owl's Nest. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time.